Welcome to this 11KBW podcast on Cuts and Closures by Peter Oldman QC. This talk was given at the 11KBW Local Authority Conference on the 27th of September 2018 at the Turing Lecture Theatre in London. For more podcasts and information, please visit 11kbw.com.
Very much indeed, Karen. And as Karen says, I've got the cheery topic of cuts and closures. And of course, cuts and closures, alas, generate an awful lot of the litigation that local authorities face these days and have faced for a long time, of course. And the aim of the talk is really to give a quick trot through some of the issues, typical legal issues that will arise in challenges to cuts and closures, decisions of that nature taken by local authorities. And I hope it'll be a brisk warm-up session, really, for the rest of the day. So the first couple of slides are some bullet points about the types of legal issues that do typically arise in cases of this nature. And the ones with asterisks against them are ones that I'll be mentioning in a little bit more detail later on in the talk. So the first one, and the starting point, really, I suppose, for any issue of legality of cuts and closures, is whether you have complied with the statutory scheme or guidance which directly relates to the service which is undergoing the change. That will be the starting point and often the finishing point for your decision-making process. As I say, come to that in a little bit more detail later on. Secondly, and relating to this, the important issue of needs assessment, or however you might describe it, if you're going to undertake a series of changes to a particular service, you need to know that the service you're proposing to end up with is one that meets the basic criteria set normally by primary legislation for that particular service. So, for instance, in the field of libraries, this service has to be comprehensive and efficient, as it's put in the 1964 Public Libraries and Museums Act. And it does happen from time to time that authorities, decision makers, go quite a long way down a decision-making process in relation to reshaping a service without necessarily having founded it on looking at whether the revised service is going to meet the needs that are mandated by the statutory provisions in question. So always have in mind the question, do we need to revisit or initiate a needs assessment? Inquiries. These days, of course, and indeed for a long time, local authorities have imaginative ideas about how to reshape services. So obviously they're going to want to make sure that those imaginative ways are based on inquiries. So, for instance, if your reshaped service involves turning a penny or two, you may be in the field of commercial purposes as set out in Section 4 of the Localism Act 2011, in which case you'll have to do it through a company. So that's the sort of issue I'm referring to there. Gathering enough information for the decision to be rational, and indeed taking a rational decision on the basis of it. Of course, these are the two basic issues that arise when we talk about rationality. They've cropped up, these issues, in fact, in a number of cuts and reshaping cases recently. Consultation, of course. You could fill a morning talking about consultation alone. You'll be pleased to know I'm not going to do that. Substantive legitimate expectation doesn't often arise, but sometimes does, particularly, say, in the field of social services provision and reshaping that. Occasionally, people will say, well, I was promised this sort of service for life or for a certain period. I was given a representation that it wouldn't change. You're now reshaping your services and it's going to change. You've breached my substantive legitimate expectation. That can sometimes be an issue. Have regard duties. By that I mean, and this is an important point, by that I mean there may well be provisions in the statute you're not immediately looking at which bear on the decision to be taken. So, for instance, in a case, again, typically, let's say, about libraries, there may be educational or children's welfare issues related to that, and that will bring in certain other duties, not in the 1964 Act, but which are nevertheless likely to be relevant in any decision-making process. I'll explain a little bit more about that in a moment. Conceivably, and this is sometimes a duty that gets overlooked. Conceivably, you may be in the realm of best value consultation under the 1999 Act. That's, of course, normally about very large scale and very high level rearrangements, but those rearrangements may involve cuts. So bear in mind the possibility that the 1999 best value duty to consult could be engaged. Human rights, sometimes decisions relate to service users' human rights, again, typically in the field of social services. Error of fact, so this is actually, I suppose, an aspect of rationality. If in your decision-making process you, let's say, undertake a needs assessment and there's a fundamental error of fact in that needs assessment, that itself can be a ground for successful judicial review claim. Procurement. There may well be related issues in relation to procurement when you're reshaping services. In other words, cuts may also involve a decision to terminate existing contracts and to seek to procure others, so there could be quite tricky timing issues there. There may also be the vexed question about whether you want to vary a contract or contracts that you've currently got in place. And that may bring in the tricky issue about whether you have to re-procure or whether you've got a gateway to not procuring under Regulation 72 of the public contracts regulations. You may be slightly stymied if a building you're trying to sell or one that you've been using and in which you have an interest, if that is an asset, becomes an asset of community value. That sometimes comes in slightly from left field. And lastly, in terms of this overall run-through, budgets, and that's going to be an issue I'll be majoring on at the end of the talk, the question of challenges to budgets when cuts and closures are involved. So as I say, let's unpack some of those topics in a bit more detail, and starting with compliance with the statutory scheme or the statutory guidance, which is present in the very statute that governs the service you are looking at. So, for instance, again, typically libraries, the 1964 Public Libraries and Museums Act. These acts, as the 64 Act does, may impose substantive duties. Others may impose procedural duties. So the substantive duty in the 64 Act is, as I've said already, to provide a comprehensive and efficient library service. And that is your starting point. That is the basis on which you have to go forward. And as I say, that's why it's so important to bear in mind the need to revisit your needs assessment, your assessment of what would amount to a comprehensive and efficient library service for your residents, or indeed to completely rework it, because these things are major pieces of work and sometimes they need to be started again. And the second example I've given there is children's centres, where we have an example of an act which imposes both substantive and procedural duties where there is change afoot. So the substantive duty in relation to children's centres is to make arrangements for sufficient provision of children's centres to meet local need. So again, one's immediately into the issue of ensuring that is the starting point. And it also, elsewhere in the Act, imposes procedural duties of consultation before there is to be any change in children's centre provision. Rationality. We start with, and as I say, really there are two main aspects, basing your decision on sufficient information, and that's where we have the link to, of course, to the needs assessment, which I've already mentioned, and the second issue of rationality in the final decision that's actually taken. Dealing with the first of those, sufficiency of information, that's, of course, the Tameside duty, and always worth reminding oneself of what that duty is and how it was put in the Tameside case, challenged there to the Secretary of State. Did the Secretary of State ask himself the right question, by which is meant the question imposed by the statute, the statutory duty under which the provision is being made and to which there are to be changes? And did the Secretary of State take reasonable steps to acquaint himself with the relevant information to enable him to answer it correctly? And you'll see that this will often be relevant in cuts and closures cases. It's a point that's been relied on by claimants in a rash of them recently, including the Northamptonshire Libraries case and the Bristol SEN case, which I'll be talking about in a little bit more detail. That Bristol case is particularly relevant, as we'll see, to budgets. I've given an example there of a challenge to the Lord Chancellor, a successful challenge to the Lord Chancellor, not to do with local authorities, but there the Lord Chancellor was reorganising housing possession scheme areas for the purposes of the legal aid scheme, and it was alleged successfully that he had failed to take into account sufficient information, relevant information, to make his decision rational. There's also a link here between sufficiency of information and the public sector equality duty. The idea being, of course, that if you discharge the public sector equality duty, that will allow you to get enough information, enough relevant information, to understand equality's impacts and to fully take them into account in your due regard obligations under Section 149 of the Equalities Act. Second aspect of rationality, as I said, is, of course, in the decision. And really, this has to, you can, I suppose, subdivide that into two types of effect. One, you have to take the relevant information that you've hopefully gathered into account. And two, you have to reach a rational conclusion once you've taken it into account. And on the first one, we have an interesting example of a cuts case where it was held that the relevant information wasn't taken into account. The Northants Library case, where it was held that the cost of relocating co-located children's centres, there were children's centres where libraries were also located, the cost of relocating them wasn't properly taken into account when the council decided to close the libraries, and that was one of the reasons why the decision was quashed. Consultation. Of course, we keep in our minds the two overall sources of the duty to consult, the statutory duty, which will be expressed in different ways in different statutes. And Moseley is, of course, an example of a case about statutory duties to consult, and in that case adopts and approves of the long-held, long-established Gunning principles. And then, of course, common law, the common law duty to consult. Broadly speaking, the duty to consult at common law arises where it would be unfair not to, in the light of a promise or representation to consult, a history of consultation on a particular issue, or a pressing need for a fairly localised and well-defined group of people who would be affected by service changes. And it's certainly not just a duty to consult where the court thinks that it is, or feels that it is fair to do so. It is more rigorously defined by the authorities than that. To that extent, there's a health warning that comes, another health warning that comes with the Bristol case, where there were suggestions towards the end of that judgment that the court could take a stand back and have a general feel about how it was looking and decide whether the court itself felt it was fair to consult or not. To say the common law is more compartmentalised and more directed than that. Some of the recent issues on consultation in cuts and closures cases have been as follows. Do you have to consult about discarded alternatives? And that's very much a hare that was set running by the Moseley case, where it was held in that particular context, and that was statutory consultation involving a council tax reduction scheme. It was held that it would have been appropriate and there should have been consultation about discarded alternatives. It's going to be a fairly rare case, however, I think, that where a judicial review claim will, against a local authority decision to cut or to close, will be, it's a fairly rare claim where a failure to consult about discarded alternatives will result in a success for the claimant. That said, the advice must now be, if there are two or three principal, or even perhaps one or two principal alternatives that indeed have been discarded on the way, then why not just say so in your consultation document, put a couple of lines in, and you've explaining why, and you have probably ticked the Moseley box. Secondly, the issue of whether consultation material is misleading. I've seen a bit of a rash of claims where that allegation, which is a serious allegation actually, has been made in the light, really, of Moseley, where unusually the Supreme Court held that the consultation material was indeed misleading. So be on the lookout for claims of that nature, but generally speaking, if you've done your consultation document fairly, it's unlikely that that sort of claim is going to be successful. Next, another Bristol point, I'm afraid. Does the public sector equality duty itself impose a duty of consultation? Dicta to that effect, as the judge thought in the Bristol case in Hurley, allowed the judge in Bristol to decide that it did. In my view, it doesn't, or doesn't necessarily, to be discussed, but one to watch out for. And interestingly, in a very recent case, a different claim against the Lord Chancellor, just very recently, this was about cuts to legal aid for criminal defence, so not in the area of local authority cuts, but potentially relevant. Interesting passage where the court decided that there'd been a failure of consultation because there had been a failure to be transparent in the consultation, and that is not not typically the way a consultation challenge succeeds. And there could potentially be a mutation, I think, here of the consultation principles to incorporate, perhaps slowly, a new duty or sub-duty of transparency in consultation. Worth just dwelling on this passage here. Judge said, the first point, which shouldn't need to be made, but evidently does, so the judge obviously thought this was an obvious point, is that consultees are entitled to expect that a government ministry undertaking a consultation exercise will conduct it in a way which is open and transparent. In particular, they're entitled to expect that if, on the crucial question raised in the paper, officials have carried out an analysis which forms the basis of the proposal, then that fact will be mentioned in the consultation documents and not left to be inferred. So query whether this will be used as a springboard for suggesting that consultation documents should, in short, be rather longer than they perhaps are at the moment and should include more background information that officers have drawn together. As I say, early stages, but one to watch out for. Have regard duties. And here what I'm talking about, as I mentioned earlier, is the possibility, indeed the likelihood, really, in most judicial review claims against local authorities, that other statutes, not the one you're primarily looking at, will bear on your decision. And you have to, typically the wording in the statute will be, you have to have regard to certain factors, as you're well aware. So the first point to note is, do check that it is just have regard, and it's not a more stringent duty than that, depend on the wording. And these factors can be factors referred to both in the statutory material or guidance. And a good example is, of course, the public sector equality duty, due regard, need. But I've highlighted a couple which I found are cropping up quite a lot in judicial reviews and worth bearing in mind because I think they will be of quite general application. First of all, Section 11 of the Children Act 2004, where there's a duty to, as I put on the board, make arrangements for ensuring that functions are discharged, having regard to the need to safeguard and promote the welfare of children. When you first look at it, you think, oh, well, that's about structures. That's about a high-level structural organisation within local authorities to ensure that those needs are considered. But we know from Ansola Zema against Westminster City Council now a few years ago that that's not the case. It's not just a structural or target duty. It's an enforceable duty, enforceable by an individual in a cut situation. So make sure the paperwork refers to it, in short. That said, you will frequently be able to defeat a challenge based on Section 11 because the courts have repeatedly said that the Section 11 duty may well be subsumed through the observance of other duties. So, for instance, in the case of Jutler, the second of those I mentioned just there, it was held that observance of the public sector equality duty, which had taken place in that case, was sufficient to show that, in effect, the Section 11 duty had itself also been observed. More controversially, one to watch, Children and Families Act 2014, Section 27. Now, this is a duty, as we see there, to keep under review the educational provision, training provision, social care provision made in the local authority's area for children and young people who have special educational needs or a disability. And I'm just going to focus on that limb of 1A, of subsection 1 for today's purposes. Two, we see, subsection 2, the authority must consider the extent to which the provision referred to there is sufficient to meet the educational needs, training needs and social care needs of the children and young people concerned. And then three, very significantly, in exercising those functions, the authority must consult. And then we have a list as long as your arm, A to K, all sorts of people and institutions. Now, you look at this and you say, OK, this is a duty to keep this under review. It's something that the authority has to do from time to time at a high level. However, in a case which, to an extent, I think went somewhat under the radar for a couple of years, a case called DAT against West Barks, the judge on a judicial review claim attacking social an element of social services provision being cut, said this: despite my misgivings about the practical consequences of such a view, I'm driven to the conclusion that the duties under Section 27 must bite where a local authority makes a decision which will necessarily affect the scope of the provision referred to in Section 27. So in other words, an individual can say, right, well, my little neck of the woods has been affected, I've been affected, in taking that decision, the local authority didn't carry out these duties, including this very onerous duty of consultation, and that's enough for me to win my case. And the judge agreed, and it was followed in Bristol. Now, the Bristol case, which is one I did, was one where we argued that DAT was just, with respect to the judge, just wrong. And I think it is just wrong, and I think that it is what it says, merely a duty to keep this provision under review. And I think that in due course, and perhaps in the nearish future, there will be a departure from the view that Section 27 is engaged in these circumstances. And I'll touch on that in just a moment when I refer to some of the cases relating to budgets. Best value duties, back to best value duties. The LGA 1999, of course. A best value authority, and you are all best value authorities, of course, must make arrangements to secure continuous improvement in the way in which its functions are exercised, having regard to combination of economy, efficiency, and effectiveness. And then for this purpose, you've got a duty to consult various representatives, in fact, of different groups, not necessarily to go out and consult everyone generally. It's aimed at representatives of different groups set out in the statute. And as I've said, it's perhaps more about rearrangements than cuts, but of course, cuts can involve rearrangements and vice versa. That said, it's clear from the case law, Nash and Barnett and Peters and Haringey, that this is pretty high-level stuff. It's not generally going to be engaged in a typical decision to cut a particular service. It might be involved, for instance, in a whole-scale outsourcing or insourcing that you decide to undertake. Watch out, if you are in this territory, for 2015 guidance in relation to this duty, which actually goes off on a bit of a tangent, because it brings in the concepts of ensuring that environmental and social concerns should be considered where appropriate in undertaking in taking decisions in relation to best value. And those concepts, environmental and social, are not, as you'll see, immediately apparent from the way the best value duty is set out in subsection 3.1, economy, efficiency and effectiveness, which I've put on the board. Budgets. I've been promising budgets for a time. I'm coming good on my promise. A bit of be in my bonnet on this one. What do I mean by a budget claim? Well, a typical claim in relation to cuts and closures may be that the full council, when it set its annual budget, when it set its council tax in February time or whenever it might be, which include, and this includes, of course, a budget line cutting, for instance, let's say again, libraries. The claim is that in setting that budget envelope, full council should have had regard to the public sector quality duty, should have considered consultation responses, a needs assessment, whatever it might be, all the typical bases of claim in a judicial review claim. And the council, until recently successfully, will typically say, well, you don't have, the full council doesn't have to consider all these matters in relation to all these budget lines which it's considering when it's setting the budget. They can lawfully be considered later on, as long as there remains flexibility in how those savings within the budget envelope are to be delivered. So in other words, once the an executive decision, whether it's by cabinet or officers, comes to take a decision about service delivery within the budget envelope, that's the point at which the local authority can, and indeed should, engage with these various duties, consultations, so on, as appropriate. And here are some of the cases to date. I list them all. The orthodoxy has been that the council's position, as I've explained it just now, is correct until recently. I'm going to highlight some text in just a moment from one of those cases. There are two cases coming up next month, very much traversing this ground, one involving Haringey and the other involving Surrey. And the importance of that is that this will allow a court to revisit the last of those decisions, once again the Bristol case, where the orthodoxy was, in my view, not followed, and in my view, wrongly not followed. But let's look at the orthodox position by a quick quotation from Lancashire, the JG in Lancashire case. And this is the nub of it, really. What, in fact, has happened in this case, said the judge, is that the decision maker has taken a preliminary decision in relation to its budget. So we're talking, at this point, we're talking about the setting of the budget in February time, fully aware that the implementation of proposed policies would be likely to have an impact on the affected users, in particular disabled users, because there the claim was on behalf of a disabled person, but not committing itself to the implementation of specific policies within the budget framework until it had carried out a full and detailed assessment of the likely impact. In my view, there's nothing wrong in principle with such an approach. And then going to the rest of the bold text at the bottom, there remained flexibility as to how any such effect on disabled persons could be minimised and mitigated. I'm satisfied that the council kept an open mind as to the precise policies that would be implemented. So as long as you keep an open mind and as long as there's flexibility at that point, it is lawful, says the judge, to undertake the various ancillary duties in relation to cuts, consultation, PSED and so on at that stage. Bristol, a decision in July this year, August in fact, departs from that orthodoxy. This was a challenge to the setting of an SEN budget envelope within which it was proposed that there should be service changes, service cuts, but the unchallenged evidence was that before those specific cuts would be put into place, there would indeed be consultation, consideration of the public sector quality duties and so on and so forth. Notwithstanding that, the judge said that the full council, there should have been consultation material, PSED consideration before full council when it set the budget. And you can imagine that the submissions were to the effect that, well, that would be wholly impractical because the full council has to look at any number of budget lines and there'd be a garage full of material for it to look at if it had to do this, go through this process in setting the full budget. But to no avail. I think the case is unlikely to be followed. I suspect that one of the cases that I referred to just now, the Haringey and Surrey case, I suspect that a judge will either decide that it is wrong in law or will decide that it can be distinguished on the facts. In terms of your own approach to this case, if you're threatened with it, I would strongly suggest that you make those two points. As regards the facts, the point to make is that it was about education funding, which, as you know, follows a rather different chronology from most of other local authority funding. So you get your high-level budget consultation typically with residents in October, November time. You don't get your dedicated schools grant notification until December. Consequently, the council in this case, in the Bristol case, didn't consult at all in its high-level consultation about special needs. I suspect the decision may well have gone the other way had there just been some mention in the high-level consultation document about the possibilities for cuts in special needs, but there wasn't. So be mindful of the way in which this case can be distinguished. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. For more details, please visit 11kbw.com.